This is Community Radio, and you're listening to Liberación, the nexus of local and global politics, art, and struggle. Liberación provides audiences with perspectives rarely heard on corporate-sponsored media stations. Our guests include educators, grassroots activists, artists, workers, and independent analysts who engage both local and global struggles, embracing a vision of freedom, solidarity, and social change.
This only got one good ear left, boy. You want to save it? You want to talk?
This is Antonia Tarder, and I will be your host for this segment of Liberación. The focus of our program is the criminal justice system within the Champaign-Urbana community. With an eye on the Champaign Citizen Review Board, a recent courthouse protest of the criminal justice system, and the exoneration of Patrick Thompson after 4 years and three trials, you will have an opportunity to hear commentaries on today's show by Champaign Council member and co-founder of the IMC, Danielle Chenoweth, community activist, co-founder of VEIA, Visionaries for Educating Youth and Adults, and recently acquitted Patrick Thompson, Ruth Wyman, the attorney for the Patrick Thompson case, community activists and supporters of Patrick Thompson, as well as local poet and co-founder of CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, Aaron Amons, and community journalist and activist Brian Doliner, who conducted interviews for today's show. When the whole police department was white, justice was the Black Panthers. Listen. We've been robbed of our religion, our government and social position. Listen. And you won't see no quick solution until you see the Black Revolution. But when them come to arrest the Black mind, they need 30 cops or more. In the midst of countless complaints regarding the conduct of area police officers, the Champaign Review Board was proposed by a coalition of Champaign-Urbana community members and organizations concerned with issues of social justice in our community. The Citizen Review Board was approved by the council and established for the purpose of providing independent civilian review of investigations of alleged police misconduct of officers employed by the Champaign and Urbana Police Departments. The board seeks to review complaints of misconduct filed by citizens. A major goal of the board is to ensure the integrity of investigations of police misconduct and to enhance community confidence when relating with police officers whose job is to maintain the safety and well-being of area residents. Across the country, review boards have been established. Through their independent review process, they have found incidents of police misconduct where investigations with police departments had failed to disclose all of the facts. In many of the cases, officers have been suspended and cases reopened and reviewed by police departments as a result of the findings of citizen review boards. However, the success or failure of citizen review boards is dependent upon cooperation and understanding between the citizen review board and the police department. Members of the board need to be trained to understand police practices and procedures, and also to understand their role within the community. A willingness by the police department to accept criticism and to change policies and procedures to meet a changing community structure is essential. For the police and community to adequately understand each other's perspective, it is imperative that they communicate. That communication can best occur through a diversified board of civilians representing the interests of the community at large. Brian Doliner talks with Champaign Council member Danielle Chenoweth regarding the establishment of the Citizen Review Board, some reasons why the Citizen Review Board is important to this community, and some of the concerns which still remain.
This is Brian Doliner. I'm here today with Danielle Chenoweth talking about the formation of a Citizen Police Review Board in Urbana. And Danielle, could you give us a little backdrop, a history of the formation of the Police Review Board in Urbana?
Well, there was a grassroots group that worked with the NAACP, and the Green Party was involved, and there were also just a lot of different citizen groups who met for many years and tried to push the idea of an independent oversight board for the police department in both cities and in the county. So it could be one thing that looked over all of these things, or it could be city by city. That group gained strength with the last election with the mayor and council in 2005. And a mayor and council was elected where they had citizen review board as one of their top priorities. So after that election, the mayor and council established a task force to look at citizen review board. And it included people from the Fraternal Order of Police here locally, the chief of police. It also included people from that grassroots group. Oftentimes, grassroots folks are actually cut out once it becomes a formal process or a legislative process. In this case, the grassroots group was really included throughout the whole process. That task force in 2006 brought a recommendation to the council. And at that point, we went into negotiations with the FOP for their contract, and that was taken off the table for about a year. It came back to us in the summer of 2007, and it was greatly changed from the task force recommendation. Now, the task force put together a version that was the best of all the citizen review boards throughout the country. They had gone to conferences. They had really gathered that information. But the state FOP, the State Fraternal Order of Police, got involved and was really involved in gutting the Citizen Review Board of Police Ordinance. So when it came to the council, we really had the job of putting teeth back into the ordinance. And it was a struggle, and there were a lot of there's a lot of back and forth. And in the end, we really established a very strong citizen review board for the police. Now, there were compromises made, but generally speaking, that the citizen review board that we have has the ability to compel evidence and hear from witnesses, and it is independent. So those things matter. So at this point, the Citizen Review Board of Police has 7 members, and the human relations officer is the staff person who attends the meetings.
Danielle, if I can ask you what happened last summer in the struggle for subpoena power before the city council.
What happened is that basically a version of the Citizen Review Board of Police ordinance came to the council. And between the time that the task force released its version and the year later that it came to us, it was very much gutted. By that, I basically mean that it was a... Because sometimes you can have a citizen review board that's actually worse than not having one. Because if people feel like there's protection and review and it's really not there and it's a farce, it actually can be damaging to a community. And I felt like it was on that line. It was really close to being one of the, you know, just being kind of a figment of our imagination, so to speak. So what the council had to really do is to fight to put back into the ordinance the ability for that review board to compel evidence, to hear from witnesses, to have access to documentation, and to do things in the public so the people, there was transparency. Those were the things that we were struggling over.
This is WFT 90.1 FM, and at the moment you're listening to Brian Doliner, who is speaking with Danielle Chenoweth regarding policing in the community.
And if I can ask you, what kind of stories have you heard that require these kind of necessities, these teeth to the police review board?
Well, this is what happened. I became a council member in 2001. And at that point, I hear from all kinds of folks. And I became, over time, the person who people would go to when they had a complaint against the police, or they had a complaint and they had submitted their complaint and there was no response through the old process, which was all done by the police department. They would review their own complaints. And so what happened is a lot of things would come to me, and I would go to the chief of police and I would ask for some information. I would ask for information about that person's case, which I was not given because I was told it was being handled in the courts and they didn't have the ability to talk to me about it. Or I was given information that was very minimal, like, you know, basically the officer apologized, or there were actions taken and they wouldn't say what actions. And I would ask for police policy so that I understood, was this in the purview of police policy? I never received a single piece of paper that had a any police policies on it as a council member who is in a position of authority with the city. I could not get this information from the police department. And also, as a council member, I'm hearing a story and I get another story. I'm not in a position to gather all that information and make some kind of judgment. That's really what a citizen review board needs to be. And so it's important that there be some kind of body that can do that. So I'll tell you a little bit about some of the things that were going on before the Citizen Review Board that were of concern to me. And I'm going to talk about three different cities, Champaign, Urbana, and Rantoul, not just Urbana, because I believe that the Citizen Review Board is needed in all those cities, and currently we only have a Citizen Review Board in Urbana. I had a situation with a constituent where this is a white woman who was a student in veterinary school who was lived about three blocks away from me. She was a constituent, and she was walking home in the middle of the street, and she had been drinking, and she had an open container of beer. The police approached her and, basically asked her what her name was, and she gave a different name than her actual name. And over time, this was discovered, and basically, she was charged with obstructing justice. She actually had a felony against her for giving out a false name. Now, she actually, in the middle of the interaction, finally did admit that she had given a false name and gave her correct name, but that her initial response was to give a false name. So I was working with her. One of the things that happened in that interaction is that she mentioned, they asked her, why didn't you give us your real name? And she said, because I don't trust the police. The interaction completely changed at that point, and she then was asked, well, why don't you trust the police? And she started talking about some cases in town. And that was when basically they slapped her with the, we're going to slap you with the greatest charge that we can. We're going to recommend the greatest charge that we can to the state's attorney. So she had she was facing a felony, and she had to plea bargain that down to a misdemeanor. But that's an example. I also had a constituent come to me who was at a bingo hall on North Lincoln Avenue. And her story was that she was at the bingo hall. The police came. There was a fight at the bingo hall. Her cousin was involved. The police came, and her cousin was bleeding, and she was begging for the police to call an ambulance because her cousin was in really bad shape. And the police were being, according to her, very disrespectful, not calling a police for this guy. And so she started to really say, getting kind of emotional and excited, and said, you got to call an ambulance. My cousin is bleeding. How can you just have him laying there? And they basically started to get in her face. She said she never touched them and she didn't do anything, but at some point she was very mouthy with them in an attempt to try to get some help. And they basically responded to her being mouthy by taking her arms, putting them behind her back, and smashing her face on the ground. And then she was charged with obstruction of justice and she was facing a felony charge. So she went through this process as well, and that's one of the things that I brought to the police. But there are some bigger issues as well in this town. I think it's important to note a couple of cases. In Champaign, there was a homeless, developmentally disabled man named Greg Brown. And I believe it was the year 2000, in October of 2000, he was approached by police because he was in an alleyway. He was looking through some garbage. And the police basically approached him. He was very afraid of the police, very scared. And he started to try to get away from the police. And they followed him. And eventually, when he wouldn't be cooperative, they basically grabbed him and pulled him to the ground. Well, he went hysterical. And they had 6-7 cops on top of him. And he died that evening. Now, the News Gazette ran the police report. They didn't look for witnesses. They didn't talk about what else happened. They just ran the PR coming out of the police. Well, the local independent paper at the time, I think it was called The Octopus, basically some of the writers at that paper lived in the apartment where the dumpster had been, and they heard this man begging for his life, saying, I can't breathe. Please get off of me. I can't breathe. And so there were witnesses to show this. Well, there was no independent investigation, et cetera. Eventually, the family did sue the city of Champaign, and they won basically a settlement of over $100,000. But this man died, and we don't really know we don't know as a public what happened. How did this come about? Was it regular police policy, in which case we need to look at the policy? Was it individual police behavior? It's a black box for us. The same thing with Patrick Thompson case. The Patrick Thompson case is a case where a man was videotaping the police. He worked with youth, and he was trying to improve youth-police relations. He let the police in Champaign know that he was doing this in Urbana, and he was charged with eavesdropping for videotaping the police, this very obscure law, state law that had not been used in this way. Eventually, those charges were dropped, but within the same time frame, within a matter of days, he was also charged with a home invasion and criminal sexual abuse of a neighbor, a white woman who lived a couple doors down from him, and he was a African-American activist. But what happened is she allegedly called the police. Well, the Urbana Police Department never even went to her home to investigate, to look for fingerprints, which would have absolved him if he didn't do it or found him guilty if he had, to collect any kind of evidence whatsoever. So the question that we have is, well, is that police policy that you don't, that when somebody says that there was an attempted rape, you never go to their apartment to see if you can gather evidence? Or was it individual police officers? These are the kinds of questions that even a council member does not have the power to address. The last thing I'll say is that there was an issue with access to documents. And this is why the access to documents issue is so important. The state's attorney had been making the choice for the longest time to allow the documents, the court records, to be accessible to the public and to all the different attorneys in the courthouse. After the, and it may be coincidental, I don't think it is coincidental, but after Sergeant William Allen Myers in the Champaign jail was found hooding and tasing people and essentially torturing them with electroshock stun guns in our county jail, and that story was uncovered through access to documentation, within months of that story, the documents were gone. And so now we don't have, as a public, even after trial is over, we don't have access to police documents. We don't know what the police is saying about a certain case. We don't know if they're lying. Therefore, there's not accountability there. And any time you have a situation where there are documents that can be used to transform a person's life and can put them in prison forever, and there is not access to those documentation, the public does not have access to review and look over that, those documents, there's a real problem. In fact, under the Supreme Court Rule 412C that says that these documents cannot be provided to the public, also says the documents can't be provided to the defendant as copies. So basically, it's like the Patriot Act, you know, on a local level. We don't have access to the really fair access to the evidence that's being used against us as people. So with the Citizen Review Board of Police, access to documents was a very important part of that, because we've seen on the county level that this has really hampered journalists' ability to get to the bottom of issues.
All right, and so what did it take to get this subpoena power for documentation and for witnesses for the Police Review Board? Can you explain the struggle for this last summer?
One thing to know is that everything takes 4 votes, and if you don't want it to be vetoed, it takes 5 votes. So what I did is I basically lined up my votes with council members talking about how, you know, we cannot say that we have a Citizen Review Board of Police if we can't compel evidence and hear from witnesses, if there isn't public access to the meetings and access to documentation for the people on the board, then this is really an illusion, this review board. So I think, you know, we have a very reasonable council, and I feel like, you know, it did not take a lot of persuading for people to understand that basically this ordinance had been gutted. There's a real problem in this town, and actually in this country, but definitely in this town, where the moment you start asking questions about how the police do things, you are labeled anti-police. The moment you question the details of an ordinance, you are anti-police. And I received a letter after I spoke up from our state's attorney, Julia Reitz. And in this letter, she was livid. She was livid that I had spoken up against the police. She was livid that I had brought up cases that were hearsay. She demanded an apology from me publicly, and she showed up at the next meeting to hear my apology. I did not give an apology because I have nothing to go on but hearsay. That's the whole point. A citizen review board of police gets to the bottom of hearsay. Council members don't have that power. I can only go on hearsay. In fact, I do not have the tools of investigation. I cannot compel evidence. I cannot hear from witnesses, etc. That's what a citizen review board is supposed to do. But it really scared me, actually, the extent to which the state's attorney spoke about how her husband had served Urbana for 20 years as a police officer, and she's proud of him and the fellow officers, which is great. That's fine. I would feel the same way if I was her, but that basically she called the problem with law enforcement a few bad apples. The whole idea that as a legislator, I can't speak about the issues, about the details of an ordinance without being told that I need to issue an apology to the entire police force in this town, really, it to me illustrates the whole us-them mentality that happens oftentimes within the police. And this gets to the reason why we need a citizen review board of police, is because you know the way it works now. In the Greg Brown case where a man was suffocated during an altercation with the police, who investigated it? It was the Urbana Police Department. When the same thing happens in Urbana, who investigates it? It's the Champaign Police Department. They're considered independent. Now, Brian, if you and I, if something happens to me, and our policy is that I call you to come and get my back when something is going on, something's going down with me, and you're there and you save my life on a weekly, monthly basis, do you think that when I'm accused of something, you can be independent in terms of addressing what has happened to me? Of course not. We've been saving each other's lives. There's no independence there. You can't expect humans to have independence in that situation. So the whole way in which we currently do police investigations is a farce. It really is a farce. And people need to own up to that fact. And the city of Champaign and the Champaign County absolutely need Citizen Review Board of Police. And in fact, Champaign's got some real issues in their police department, which have not been changed as a result of a new police chief. I was very hopeful at the beginning with R.T. Finney's behavior around the taser issue, where he took tasers off the table when he saw that the community was opposed to it. But I've really lost confidence over time because I don't see him working towards transparency like a citizen review board of police, which I feel is the absolute minimum. It's not the maximum. It's the minimum to have respect and reputation within your police department, is that you are not afraid of an independent auditor coming in and looking at your business. If you are, I think that there's something wrong. That to me is indicative that there's something wrong that's going on within that police department. Every single nonprofit and governmental agency has an independent auditor who comes in and looks at your financial records. Wouldn't you expect the same with somebody who carries a gun?
These is man-made laws selectively applied. All they need is probable cause for me to fry. Probable cause, probable cause. You don't have to break no laws, they say probable cause. Probable cause, probable cause. You don't have to break no laws, they say probable cause. Probable cause, probable cause. You don't have to break no laws, they say probable cause. Probable cause, probable cause. You don't have to break no laws, they say probable. Couldn't believe it when he took me in. Threw me and my man up in the van. A 7-hour stand riding around watching them harass the black man. I had the Afghan I just caught from the record shop. Took it up the block, my usual spot. When I roll a L, I never expected to go to jail. I wish they'd all go to hell.
This is WFT 90.1 Community Radio.
Other than my skin is black like yours. Now they got me in the beast sitting right in the shores. Up in Central Booking, your people looking, knowing that I'm in the rap game. And I got trapped the same way they did. Probable cause, probable cause. You don't have to break no laws, they say probable cause.
With an increasing number of resident complaints regarding police treatment and concerns over convictions against black defendants, including youth, by all white juries, community members protested last month at the Champaign County Courthouse to express their concerns and to demand a criminal justice system that is worthy of its name. Erin Amon speaks to some of the community residents attending that protest.
All right. That'll work. We're standing here with Miss Lori Serb. But tell us who you are. Well, I'm a staff member over at the Graduate Employee Organization. It's a union for graduate employees. I've been a community activist for the last 10 years that I lived in this community around various issues, including LGBT rights, anti-war demonstrating, the injustice system that's here, including the fight that the Champaign police wanted to get tasers on their belts as a tool to control the people. And I was very much against that, so that's why I'm holding this sign here, the 50,000 volts. I think tasers are absolutely unnecessary. I think the police have an arsenal that's way too large as it is, and they need to start building trust within the community and show the community that they're there to serve the people who are paying their salaries.
You seem very comfortable in front of the microphone.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. So tell us more about what's going on here today.
Well, we've got a lot of different people with a lot of different messages on these great homemade signs. People who've come together from, we've got members of the GEO here, we've got people who live in Champaign, people who live in Urbana that are out here, people who've been directly affected by the criminal justice system in Champaign. And it's a great show of support. We've got lots of kids here that are seeing, you know, a place to speak out and get empowered at such a young age. That's nice to see, because that tells me that this is going to keep moving forward, you know. It's going to keep, the organizing is going to happen. It's going to get bigger, louder, and they're going to have to hear us. So
tell me, do you trust the Champaign police or Urbana police?
No, I don't, actually. I've had a few incidences where I felt there was some miscarriage of justice, one of them being during the demonstrating for anti-war efforts against the invasion and occupation of Iraq and Iran, and coming up Iran, but Afghanistan and Iraq. In 2003, I had gotten into an altercation with a pro-war, very antagonistic woman who was taking photographs of us on our peace line. And when we got into an altercation, I ended up getting tackled by a police officer, knocked to the ground. And when I took him to court, I lost in court because he had two other officers, and he's still on the Champaign Police Force, Officer Wills. And he had himself and two other officers lie on the stand to say that I had hit him first and that we had lost our balance and rolled down the hill. And that's how I ended up on the ground. He doesn't know how he ended up on top of me. I had 9 witnesses that saw him run from the parking lot and tackle me from the back, knee in the back, and hitting me while my left arm was pinned underneath me. So that's one of my direct experiences with it. And so whenever I read in the paper or hear someone say that they were given a ticket or told they were obstructing justice, I always question that, because that's what I ended up getting, was a city ordinance violation of obstructing justice. And what justice did I obstruct? I mean, what happened to me was injustice.
Now, when you say you don't trust the police, why don't you consider what happened to you just an isolated incident?
Because I think they do a lot of patrolling around here to kind of tout their weight. They have this ability to stare people down, question them. I got pulled over for going 5 miles over the speed limit. I've heard stories where people were drinking coffee and they were told, you got alcohol in there. I mean, just the kind of harassment that happens when you have a police force behind you that you can get away with stuff. When I've seen that in my case, where I'm doing something in broad daylight, in the middle of the afternoon on a weekend with 9 witnesses, I really get concerned for people, especially youth who are out after dark and have some altercation and are told, are basically scared into behaving a certain way or pushed into responding when they get attacked and defending themselves, because this is an attacker, even if he is wearing a uniform, it's someone who's attacking them, and they respond in self-defense, and then they get slapped with something which tells them that they're not supposed to defend themselves, that they're just supposed to submit to whatever authority or aggressor is on top of them. And that doesn't teach our kids communication skills. It doesn't teach our kids the ability of self-defense and their ability to articulate what they're doing, why they have a right to do what they're doing, and that sense of empowerment. It takes away that empowerment from our youth.
So are you anti-police?
I think there needs to be a huge makeover of what the police system is. I don't have a direct answer on that. I think the jail system is really messed up. I think that once people get into that system, it's very hard to get out. There's no way to really re-enter society even after the correction has happened. I don't think the criminal justice system makes an effort to allow books and training and skills to be developed by people who are, quote, serving time for something that their issues are complicated, why they're there. And even if we're going to take that aside, then a real correction facility should be helping people to become better citizens and become better productive people and take care of themselves. And if they're not given those resources and tools while they're serving time, when are they supposed to get those? So you're
not saying that you are anti-police. You're not saying that you don't... You're saying that you think that there should be some form of police patrol or police officers, but you think the reins need to be pulled in. And so how do you think a case like yours, or how do you think the witnesses who saw what happened to you are affected by you being found guilty by the criminal justice system for protesting the war?
I think it encourages silence. I think what they see is that there's no way to defeat this structure that's in place, that they felt they were outstanding citizens in different ways and they were just speaking what they saw, and it was completely dismissed by the judge. I was also told by the judge, had this been a state felony, he might have decided the outcome differently. And so that says to me that it was a political move. And when I see a political move being done at a lower level court, I know that that's happening all over the place, political moves. I think that their resistance to having a citizen police review board is very telling, because that says that they have something that they know people would be shocked to know about. If there's no way, no recourse to, no checks and balances, no recourse for a system that has ultimate authority, I think that's problematic.
Tell us who you are.
My name is John Gergely. I'm a resident of Urbana.
John Gergely. So why are you out here today?
I want to support this broad movement for justice, equity in the court system, trial system here in Urbana, Champaign, in Champaign County. I think for me personally, one of the issues is there are a lot of notions we have and we tell each other about the criminal justice system, particularly that you're entitled to a trial before a jury of your peers, that the process is fair, that only the facts come out, and all of this. And I think everyone here knows it's not true, but we still don't necessarily appreciate how untrue that is, the extent to which people who end up on the jury have nothing in common, don't in any way share a community with people who are being tried, the extent to which the trial process is designed to render a guilty verdict in spite of this idea about innocent until proven guilty.
Tell me what justice and equity would look like to you.
I think one way to think about it for me is what it would mean to actually have a trial before one's peers, what justice for a community would look like, rather than this kind of industrial justice that takes place here.
Martell Miller.
Me, this is Unjustice Courthouse. We need to have more citizens come out to our protests and help us with our movement to get more people on the jury other than white.
Now, we know as black folks why one of the main reasons why black people are discouraged from being a part of this process is because we don't feel like there's really any justice going to be served for us. So what is it in you, or what keeps you going to keep fighting?
What keeps me going is my belief that God has the last word. He has the last word, and we have to keep on. We can't give up. Long as there's breath in our bodies, we cannot give up. And if I could tell the young people, if I could tell the older people, if I could tell some of the ministers really who are very, very discouraged, because once you get out here and start doing something, they will penalize you. The system will put its foot on your neck and on your family's neck. But see, to me, we have to do it anyway.
Right.
Our grandfathers and grandmothers and I, what would have happened if they would have given up? And there were white people like it is today working right alongside. There are people of goodwill everywhere. So we have to have a coalition of blacks, white, greens, whatever color, working there. Because in heaven, we're going to be all colors, else we're not going there. We got to love one another, but we've got to have some heaven on earth.
One is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice.
justice. Everyone is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice.
You're listening to WST 90.1 Community Radio in Champaign. Finally, after 4 years, the Patrick Thompson case came to a close, with Patrick Thompson being exonerated for all charges. But to understand this case, it's important to go back to 2004 and the cop watch videotaping Thompson was doing with his colleague, Martel Miller. That spring, they founded Veya and sent a letter to Champaign police notifying them of their plan to tape routine traffic stops with the intention of exposing racial profiling and over-policing of the black community. Thompson and Miller's video, Citizen Watch, caught local police in many embarrassing moments. Among other things was footage of Assistant State Attorney Elizabeth Dobson videotaping Thompson and Miller while they were videotaping police. Dobson was riding around with Champaign police collecting evidence to prosecute the two black activists. On Monday, August 23, 2004, Miller was indicted on 2 counts of felony eavesdropping, an outdated state law that carried 4 to 15 years in prison. On August 24, 2004, the very next day, Thompson was charged with sexual abuse and home invasion. A white woman who lived next to Thompson alleged that he entered her apartment at approximately 7 a.m. in the morning and attempted to rape her. Although Thompson had no formal legal training, he made the bold decision to defend himself in the first trial, which ended in a hung jury. In the second trial, Thompson hired local African-American Harvey Welch, who called only one witness for the defense, and the trial resulted in a guilty verdict. At this point, attorney Bob Kirshner and Ruth Wyman stepped in, filed a post-trial motion, and called several additional witnesses. In a rare court decision, Judge Henry Clem reversed the guilty verdict on the basis that Thompson had received ineffective assistance of counsel from Welch. This brings us to the third trial, which started with the selection of an all-white jury. In a miraculous turn of events, Judge Clem allowed one of Kirshner's motions and dismissed the charge of home invasion. Of all things, he ruled that the state had not proven that Patrick Thompson was not a police officer. This is one of the elements required to prove a charge of home invasion. Even though the sexual abuse charge remained, the weight of the 6 to 30 year sentence that home invasion carried was lifted off of Thompson's shoulders. In closing arguments, the case depended on whether or not the jury believed the accuser. Throughout the four-year ordeal, Patrick Thompson has been the galvanizing force for criminal justice reform in Champaign County. But it has been community mobilization which narrowly saved Patrick from the clutches of the prison industrial complex. Thousands of dollars were raised for his defense, many hours were spent watching trials, and numerous protests were held at the courthouse. This is the story of a man exonerated before he served years in the penitentiary. It was the people power that set Patrick free. You're listening to WFT 90.1 FM Community Radio in Champaign. Brian Doliner speaks to Patrick Thompson and his supporters as they rejoice Patrick's exoneration after the release of the verdict.
We're here with Patrick Thompson, revolutionary comrade, videographer, Citizens Watch documentarian, just beat this case after 4 years, not guilty verdict. How's it feel, Patrick?
It feels real good. I'm so happy and proud. I mean, this is all, it was, you know, I had my faith in, you know, faith in God, and, you know, he watched over me and watched over everything, and, you know, he's been with me all this time, and I just give praises to him, because if it weren't for him, I wouldn't be able to keep going. All the supporters, all the people at the IMC when we first got started, Aware, CU Citizens, Peace and Justice, everybody, the religious community. I mean, I just thank all of y'all. I mean, you know, everybody that believed in me, supported me, everybody that didn't walk away from me during my hard time. You know, I just want to give thanks to everybody. I mean, all the people that really supported me, all the people that's been there with me. You know, Dr. Anderson, Dr. Spann, everybody. I mean, all the people that's been supportive of me and stayed by my side and believed in me and the community. I just give thanks to everybody that's been supportive of me.
And Patrick, we want to thank you for taking the lead, because without your own determination, your confidence, you wouldn't have been able to ride this through.
No, I mean, no, I probably wouldn't. I won't, my wife, my kids, my mom, my colleague, Martell Miller, I mean, everybody, you know, I just, you know, it's just been, you know, the support. If it weren't for you guys, I don't think in the support, and if it weren't for you guys, I know I probably would have. Just probably wanted to give up, you know, and you guys been there with me and haven't lost faith in me, and I'm thankful for everything.
So you believe in criminal justice now?
I mean, you know, I like the legal system. I like the law. I mean, I really enjoy the law. I just think that, you know, we got people that misapply the law, and when that happens, you know, people's lives get ruined. And I think the young lady, you know, I don't think she intended that to go this far, and I think the system used her. And it's sad, but they used her.
And the struggle continues. What's next?
I mean, you know, we just want to try to get back to some of the work we was doing in the community and continue to keep trying to, you know, do some positive things and get some of the young men out there in the community involved and being involved in this process of rebuilding our community. We need to do it.
We're here with Ruth Wyman, who the attorney for Patrick Thompson, who took up his case a year ago and has been diligently fighting for justice for Patrick Thompson. Ruth, it's taken three trials now. What was different about this trial?
It was clear from the transcripts of the 2005 trial and the 2006 trial that there was information and allegations and inferences that were brought in to the trial by the prosecutor that were simply inappropriate for the prosecutor, for the state to bring in. There was hearsay that was brought in and then suggested to be corroborative of the alleged victim. And the way that trials are supposed to proceed in a fair trial, in a democracy, that were not followed in the 2005 and 2006 trials. And we made sure and we did everything we could to keep that prosecutorial misconduct from occurring this time. And to a large extent, I think we were successful in that. There were certainly some objections, but we were able, in making both pretrial motions and then motions in limine outside of the jury's view, to keep things that were not appropriate to come in, that were prejudicial to the defendant and that were not relevant. We kept that information out so that the jury saw only the actual evidence that was appropriate to be seen and judged by the jury. And I think that helped.
And Ruth, I want to ask you specifically, it's something I wanted to ask you. I know you've been a champion for women's rights and rape victims. How hard was it for you to take on this case?
If I had thought when Patrick and Danielle asked me to take this on, that there was any chance that Patrick had sexually assaulted this woman, I would have told Bob no. We don't need to do this. I looked at the evidence, I looked at the transcripts, I talked with Patrick, and frankly, I don't believe that it happened. And had I had even one doubt about that, I wouldn't have suggested we take that case. And I can tell you, I am predisposed to believe a woman when she says that she was raped. Why would she lie? But it was clear from the evidence here, and it was clear from the testimony, that Patrick Thompson didn't do it. Now, whether it was someone else who did, who assaulted this woman, or whether she made the whole thing up, I'm not sure. But I know it wasn't Patrick. I know that from the evidence. And so it was not a difficult decision because of the evidence I saw, and because not only the evidence with the finger splint, but the testimony as well. It was clear he wasn't guilty. He was not only not guilty, Patrick Thompson was innocent, and I knew that from the start.
Do you think this was an attempt by Urbana police, by local authorities, to shut down Patrick Thompson and his local activism?
It certainly could have been. And as I've said before, and I think as a lot of people speculate, we'll never know. We'll never know, because who would admit to that? But the circumstances certainly imply that. So I am concerned about that. I think we'll always be concerned about that.
Hey, Aaron.
How you feeling?
Good. How you feeling today?
I'm feeling real good right now. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I think about the motion that Patrick had on the floor when he came home. The motion that Patrick had on the floor when he came home was that I'm going to fight for justice. Will anybody fight with me? And so he had people joining on and fighting with him. And when he came to me after he got out of jail from the eavesdropping, saw me down at the county jail, and I was trying to speak to him, and he was kind of standoffish because he was upset. I said, "What's up, man?" He said, "Man, y'all was all over the eavesdropping case, but we ain't nobody touching the home invasion case." And I said, "Well, man, basically we were staying away from that because we didn't know what was going on with that. The only information we had was the eavesdropping case." He said, "No, you know, this ain't no evidence in this case." So I said, "Okay, cool." Me and him talked about it a little bit, and I found out, I said, "Well, no evidence in the case." I said, "Well, wow, you know, how can I say I fight for justice and he bring a case like this and we're on second emotion, right?" So at that point, I began talking to Chris Evans all night long at Lincoln Hall until I had him on board and seeing the same thing. He and I agreed, and then he and I cornered Danielle Chenoweth, and we kept going at her. I kept going, and she finally said, "So there's no evidence." I said, "Right, Danielle, there's no evidence in the case." And she said, "Oh, wow." And that was kind of time Kurt Yort stuff was going on, too. So at that point, she came on board, and that's when we started to really rebuild CU Citizens again. And so 4 years later now, I just feel like I'm going to walk home right now. I just feel that good. I'm very relieved to see that he's been released from these charges. And I'm very relieved that we can send a message to the community that if you fight for justice, you can get it.
Danielle, what did you say to Ruth to get her to take on this case?
I don't remember. I said, "Please." I said, "Please, we need you. We need someone who cares about justice in this county." And looking around, there's not a whole lot of attorneys. In fact, there are no other attorneys that I know of who would have done the work that Bob Kirshner and Ruth Wyman did on this case. They poured themselves into it. I came to Ruth and said, "I got $1,000 for you." I think they probably spent $50,000 since then, so or more. So I just am so grateful. You know, it shouldn't have to take this, and it's not fair that there's so many people who are innocent who are sitting in prison right now who don't have community and who don't have an attorney like Ruth Wyman. And we have got major, major systems changes that are needed in this county and in this nation. We got a long way to go, but it's time for us to stop and celebrate that the police basically creating a situation of retribution against two black activists for videotaping them, which should be our right, that we can observe our public servants in the line of duty, that retaliation that resulted in this case, that we've been able to show that that's not going to play here in this county.
First trial, the second trial, the third trial, what was different about this trial?
Great representation. I would say a sharp lawyer that knew what to do and fighting for him, you know, and putting on the witnesses that he needed in some respects. Great representation. That was the biggest difference. That is always the biggest difference in these things. And even this case, I would submit that there's so much information that has not been revealed in terms of how this got to where it is. It should have been solved August 24th.
And you think that this was a political retribution for Patrick Thompson's activism?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's, and I'm not, you know, for there's so many people in this community that make claims to the police and don't get justice either. I want to say that, you know, I've experienced, you know, sexual crimes in my family, and we don't take that stuff lightly. And if we would have thought in any way that Patrick had remotely done this, we would never have gone the route we went. But it was so clear that, you know, the police didn't do their job for a reason. And they were pressing this for a reason. And we got to have an open criminal justice system. And we got to have a process that collects the evidence accurately and honestly. And we've got to have a court system that will represent clients to the fullest. It's a very serious thing when you're going to throw someone in the prisons, and it better be for a good reason, if at all. I mean, we still have to talk about prison reform. Patrick has raised so many issues, and I want to say this about Patrick Thompson. He has never thought about himself entirely. I mean, he has always thought about others and what others have been going through. And it was him that initiated the Brian Chesley representation. It was him that you know, galvanize this community to take a look at what police are doing on the street. And it's been him, you know, advocating for others. I've seen an extraordinary individual who has, you know, represented everybody and not just himself. There's some tremendous needs, and we need to learn a great deal about this, you know, from this case. We got to have honest prosecutors, honest policemen, and that will, you know, do things right. And that's why why this big ordeal happened. And it's great that Patrick set a precedent here, and hopefully it'll send a message back to law enforcement that we got to do things right.
When someone is falsely accused, it takes a tremendous amount of not only energy, but the monies that are involved, and also the fact that what people go through because of these false accusations. And it's wrong for a state's attorney like the one whom we have now, whose very husband is one of the first people to violate the civil rights of people in the city, and for her to allow a case like this to go on. That's what my primary concern is.
This is a day of hope. It gives you hope. We needed some hope.
We lost so many of these cases along the way.
It's like, you know, Yvonne was saying, the amount of effort you have to jump and clear a bar that is so high when you're falsely accused. The odds are against you if you don't have the money. It's a fundamental flaw in the justice system, and somehow it needs to be changed. It's a big job, but you can't just brush it off by saying, oh, it's just too big, what can I do?
Martell Miller and Patrick Thompson, one of them is the founder of AVEA, and I guess the other one's one of the co-founders of AVEA, Visionaries Educating Youth and Adults. Now, with all three of us knowing each other from a different life, on the streets, why did you decide to come out and do something different in the community as opposed to what you was doing before?
Two things. First thing was, I guess when we were involved in the street life and we were, you know, doing things where we were involved in criminal activity and we were actually seeing the system and going through the system and seeing, okay, there was always accountability on one side of the fence. When it came to, you know, certain, you know, especially in the minority community, when it came to crimes and stuff being committed, there was always accountability. But on the other side of the fence, there was no accountability. And for example, when we were getting pulled over, racial profiling, getting harassed, you know, at this very young age, 15, 16 years old, pulled out the car, made lay down on the ground, asking inappropriate questions about people we didn't know anything about, seeing the disparity and seeing how we were being charged and sentenced versus our other counterparts. And so that just kind of, you know, start having a lot of bearing on what could we do and what involvement we need to be involved in, you know. And so that started the process for me to say, okay, well, this is how I can start being involved, because I understand that we all deserve second chances, and in order to get a second chance, you got to have some opportunities there for you to have a second chance. So that was part of the reason why we started getting involved more in the community. And we was talking, we was sitting and discussing about, okay, well, what could we do? What could we be involved with? And that's how VIA came into conception. But I think for all of us in the bigger picture, I think we need to start looking at our roles, especially as minority males in the community, about being involved in it, especially with the younger generation saying, hey, we've been down that road. We understand that that's not the way to go. But we also got to have some opportunities for them to be able to take advantage of. For me, that was my understanding and role that I want to play, being involved in the community. So I think going forward, I enjoy what I do. And I think that it should we have a right, and we have a constitutional right to be involved in, to hold the whether it's the legal system, the educational system, whether it's accountable for their actions and their unfair treatment and the disparity and the racial injustice that goes on here at the Champaign County Courthouse. So
I appreciate you, brother. Martell, what you got for it?
They believe in putting a lot of money into Clark and instead of putting money in prevention. We got 5.something million going into Clark and a little more than 100,000 going in prevention. And so I'm looking at our justice system is a failure. I'm looking at our future in the justice system instead of education.
Shot twice with her hands up. Police questioned, but shot before she answered. One Panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no arm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her. Put mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got chills as they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer. But she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for this German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all.
The struggle to transform the criminal justice system in this community is nothing short of the struggle to decolonize our hearts, minds, and bodies from the grips of capitalism and all forms of inequality that are absolutely necessary to an economic system that requires the impoverishment, social control, and incarceration of the many. The work of all of those who have shared their words today speak to a quickly expanding community movement of people who refuse to accept any treatment by the police or other representatives of the state that is inherently beneath our dignity as human beings who are lovingly committed to the making of a new world. Thanks to all of those who made this segment of Liberacion possible, but especially to Patrick Thompson for his courage, example, and perseverance.
From her stomach, she bleed. Out of this situation, a girl was deceived, separated from her, left to mother the revolution, and lactate to attack hate, because federal estate was built for a black fate. Her emptiness was filled with beatings and court dates. They fabricated cases, hoping one would stick, and said she robbed places that didn't exist. In the midst of threats on her life and being caged with Aryan whites, through dark halls of hate, she carried the light. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. Yeah, I often wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. So dig it, people.
I'm thinking of a sign.
Carolina, her grandmother would bring news that she had a dream. Her dreams always meant what they needed them to mean.
What made them real was the action in between. She dreamt that Asada was free in their own house in Queens. The fact that they always came true was the theme. Asada had been convicted of a murder she couldn't have done. Medical evidence shown she couldn't have shot the gun. It's time for her to see the sun from the other side. Time for a daughter to be by her mother's side. Time for this beautiful woman to become soft again. Time for her to breathe and not be told how or when. She untangled the chains and escaped the pain. How she broke out of prison, I could never explain. And even to this day, they try to get to her, but she's free with political asylum in Cuba.
This program has been produced by the Liberacion Radio Collective, a community grassroots effort that seeks to embrace a vision of freedom, solidarity, and social change. We hope you'll join us in the struggle.
Freedom. You asking me about freedom? Asking me about freedom? I'll be honest with you. I know a whole lot more about what freedom isn't than about what it is, because I've never been free. I can only share my vision with you of the future, about what freedom is. The way I see it, freedom is the right to grow. It's the right to blossom. Freedom is the right to be yourself, to be who you are.